Hello there! This show contains material which a truly free society would neither fear nor suppress. The language and concepts contained herein will not cause eternal torment in the place where the guy with the horns and pointed stick conducts his business.
Hi, everyone.
Hello.
We're back.
Yeah, I had to wake Rich up, rolled him out of bed.
Painful it was. Hitting that floor, especially I have one of those new beds with the real thick mattresses, so my drop from the mattress top to the floor is like 8 feet.
Oh, do you have that NASA foam?
No, I don't have the NASA foam. Mine's a good old-fashioned mattress.
The memory foam.
That was
what
a Star
exactly
Trek episode.
Is it memorizing?
I don't know. Like, I don't know. Buzz Aldrin's phone number or something, because he's an old geezer.
He's a geezer. Yeah, that's a reference to Borat. Actually, that was...
That was Ali G.
Yeah.
Geez, Ali G.
Yeah, I think both Rich and I saw Borat in the course of over about 24 hours, and oh, that's still running through my head. It's one of those things that infects your brain.
Yeah, he's a pretty talented guy. I may have mentioned this on a previous show, but David Steinberg is doing an interview show on Nick at Night or one of those like TV stations that shows all the old programs.
Mm-hmm.
And he had Robin Williams on, and he asked Robin Williams who one of his favorite up-and-coming comedians was, and he said Sacha Baron Cohen.
Well, that says a lot.
Yeah, I was sort of impressed by that, yeah, because he's a little tasteless, a little bit base, a little sophomoric at times, but I really like his humor.
Well, I think that the base of his humor is making people feel uncomfortable with who they are.
Yeah, like going on a New York subway, opening up your briefcase or your luggage, and a chicken comes out or a hen, and then trying to kiss men on the face. He's lucky he doesn't have a knife in his chest.
Yeah, that was a little tense when he got on that subway.
I actually felt that he was in more danger on the subway than he was at the rodeo when he was singing the fake Kazakhstani national anthem to the melody of our national anthem.
Yeah, that was disturbing. But the most disturbing thing at the rodeo was the guy who was interviewing with him at the beginning.
Right, right. I saw a ton of films lately.
Ditto.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that in the middle.
Anything going on in your life?
Oh, no, nothing really exciting. We've got a new segment we're going to air in one of the future shows. A podcaster that I listen to named Grizzly sent us over a little vignette. John kind of liked his show as much as I did and suggested that we pitch him the idea of him sending over little short vignettes when he doesn't have an idea long enough for his show. So I've got it. We just have to play it. I was kind of wanting to save all this really cool stuff for the next show when we're together in the same room and we can both react to it kind of at the same time. But we'll have to figure that out.
Yeah, we're still working on the whole basement thing. And I don't know. It seems like stuff keeps happening to me. Flat tires. I've had two flat tires in the past, I don't know, month on two different cars.
Wow.
Crazy. And then the basement thing, it's crazy. Craziness.
Well, you know, I'm going to call you out on a couple of things. I mentioned this to you on the phone the other day.
All right.
And, geez, I can hear myself echoing coming back over through the Skype channel. So I apologize for that, but we're still doing it by Skype.
Yep.
So I saw, just really briefly, I saw the Dixie Chicks documentary film called Shut Up and Sing, which is okay. About what they said in 2003. One of the girls, I don't know their names, but one of the girls said something like, we're ashamed that George Bush is from Texas, because apparently she's from Texas. And then there was a whole lot of fallout from that. All the country stations stopped playing their tunes. People started giving them death threats, yada, yada, yada. So anyway, this is a great film. I'll talk about it on another show. It's called Shut Up and Sing. Check it out, because I like these girls. They sing like angels and swear like truck drivers. I mean, for me, that's the ideal woman.
Actually, it's the other way around.
Well, it might be the other way around, but something very interesting happened towards the end of the film. They were making a new record with Rick Rubin as the producer, and they were in his what I believe to be his studio, and they were going to cut a record that was a little poppier because I think they wanted to appeal to a little bit wider range of fans since they had, well, I won't use the word alienated because I don't feel that they did anything wrong. But since some of their fans felt alienated, they lost some of their fan base, so they were trying to make a record that would appeal more broadly. So they brought in Rick Rubin. You might be familiar with him, right, John?
Yes, I am. He actually, of late, he's been doing these albums where he gets an aging star and puts together some really heartfelt music with just the star, maybe one or two instruments, and he did that with Johnny Cash. And
but where else do you know
Neil Diamond?
Where else do you know him from?
Chili Peppers.
So anyway, I'm watching the girls, the chicks, playing in his studio, and Chad Smith is drumming.
Right, there you go.
So that's one of the things I need you to answer for. Why is somebody from the Red Hot Chili Peppers drumming with the Dixie Chicks?
Why am I answering for Chad Smith?
Because of the two of us, you're the bigger Chili Peppers fan.
Why would he be doing that? Because he's a decent musician. He's probably friends with Rick Rubin. They probably needed a drummer who did something.
No,
that's a
you're giving
harder.
These are all good, valid reasons. I just need you to apologize for it.
Apologize?
No.
What's
actually,
to apologize
he's
for?
A great drummer. I love his playing a lot, and he sounds really good on the record. I'm actually going to go buy that record, the new Chicks record, the one that I think won 5 Grammys, despite the fact that their entire country audience doesn't like them anymore.
Yeah, well.
The other thing I'm going to make you accountable for is Roman Catholicism.
Well, I am the spokesperson.
Exactly. I work with a guy whose daughter is going through First Communion or First Confession or something like that. And she's been having anxiety attacks at religious instructions because she's completely overwhelmed by the idea that she's going to be drinking the blood of Christ and going to be eating the body of Christ. Don't you think there's just a little bit too much drama in Roman Catholicism sometime? You know what that is? That's bread and wine, and it's watered down wine and awful bread at that.
I have no response.
Okay. Seriously, she actually had an anxiety attack and passed out. I'm actually not making that up. She was so like blown away and nervous about the fact that she was going to be eating some guy's dead flesh that she passed out.
You know, I think that has a lot more to do with poor instruction and poor preparation.
Well, and clearly this girl does have some anxiety issues. Obviously, it's not entirely Roman Catholicism's fault, and it's probably some bad teaching as well. But I'm putting 98% of it on Roman Catholicism.
Again, no response.
Okay, well, that's what I got for the intro.
I just find it funny that you're asking me to, you know, in a 3-second intro, get into the theology of Catholicism and to defend it.
Well, and that's, you know, I've done it before and I'm going to do it again.
We need a longer show.
No, we don't. We're scaring them away as it is.
Yeah, and what we want to scare them away with more is Roman Catholicism apologetics. All right.
I think we might bring a lot of listeners on with that, actually.
Okay.
So you want to play?
Do it justice.
You want to play a tune?
Yeah, hit it.
Which one are we going to play first?
We'll play the first one, and then we'll play the second one afterwards.
Okay. Well, which one is this going to be? Is this going to be Lev Zherbin?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
I think it goes in with the theme of Lev Zherbin playing a song first.
Yeah, it does. So let's check it out.
Thank you.
Another strong Lev Zurbin track.
When I hear that stuff, it makes me want to stroll along the Seine with a, you know, a glass of red wine, you know, listening to mimes.
Listening to mimes?
Yeah.
Mimery? Mimery?
Mimery.
Mimery?
It's like you're in France. It's like you're in Paris. You're walking down a street with someone, you know, hooked arm in arm with you. And you hear that song coming out of a cafe.
Yeah, I love his stuff. It's got such a nice ethnic flavor. Obviously, that one was a waltz, a nice little 3-4 piece. I could see myself dancing to that.
And I hope never to see you dancing to that.
For that, I'm going to make you watch me dance to it someday. I'm gonna call up Sacha Baron Cohen, and he's going to dance with me.
And then I'll strap you to a chair and talk to you about, I don't know, the body of Christ.
Oh, I'm way past that. That doesn't interest me at all. I was just concerned about the, like, 7 or 8-year-old girl who was passing out because of all of the guilt and drama associated with this religion.
There's nothing wrong with a little guilt.
Well, I would disagree. But anyway, what do we got for the middle? We got a lot of films. We got all kinds of stuff. Let's make it quick. Hurry up.
All right, one of the things I did is I caught up on a couple of films that Rich had already seen. Enron, Smartest Guys in the Room, and Good Night and Good Luck, which was the deal with Edward R. Murrow versus Joe McCarthy. And, you know, I'm not going to do the whole review thing, but I'm seeing some ties with these movies that I'm seeing. And I'm also seeing The Illusionist, which Rich also saw.
Actually, I saw that only a few days ago.
That's right.
The other two films I'd seen, like, well, Enron probably a year ago, and Good Night and Good Luck probably 9 months ago.
I was just shocked and appalled. I mean, I didn't know.
Shocked and stunned.
I was in shock and awe. I didn't know that much about what went on with the Enron scandal. I knew that some bad people and some bad accounting practices were going on, but I just had no idea just how morally bankrupt these people were before they were financially bankrupt. It was just amazing to find out how they just propped up absolutely nothing into a business and they got billions of dollars.
Well, and beyond that, they're murderers. They purposely caused all of those rolling blackouts in California where people died of heat stroke. Also, that energy values would go up and they could make more money. I mean, you did see the conversations or the recordings that they had of the energy traders talking about how they don't care if somebody's grandmother dies from the rolling blackouts.
Yeah, and there's this guy talking about there's a fire, there's a wildfire under one of the main transmission lines, and he's saying burn, baby, burn, because he knows it's going to jack his price up and he'll be able to sell the energy for more. And then the other conversation they recorded where you've got traders. Talking, not trader, T-R-A-I-T-O-R-S.
Traders, which, as in trading.
Yeah, but these traders were actually traders as well. They are calling up these power plants saying, hey, can you shut down for a little while, you know, and just make something up. It was just appalling.
Well, and beyond that, I don't know if you caught this part of it because they didn't really make it a feature angle of the documentary. But all of these things, these rolling blackouts and the energy problems in California, led to Democratic Governor Gray Davis getting bounced for Arnold. So basically, right. Enron was complicit in a kind of rigging an election, you know, so that the Republicans could blame all of these rolling blackouts and this energy problem that didn't exist on Gray Davis, and then oust him from his governorship.
Yeah, and there was just this weird, strange closed-door meeting before all this happened with Ken Lay and Arnold Schwarzenegger, and nobody knows what happened in that meeting.
Well, we do know what happened. We're going to get you elected, and we're going to do it by engineering, for lack of a better word, because they're sort of unengineering, but we're going to engineer some rolling blackouts, and we're going to blame them on the Democrat. These guys are evil. I mean, they're truly evil. And I haven't seen any of this get talked about in any film or any media source at all except this film.
Well, and that's what I was so upset about, because before I saw the film, I just knew that there were some bad accounting practices. But everyone from the top down in this company was complicit. And then they were dealing with investment bankers from Merrill Lynch, Citicorp, Credit Suisse, all of these huge corporations, and they all knew about it. They knew that it was a sham, and they all still invested their money because they knew that they were going to be getting huge profits.
Absolutely.
And it was just lies upon lies upon lies. And then, as someone said, it was a house of cards built over like a stack of dynamite or gasoline. It was some weird mixed metaphor that just sounded really dangerous.
Some form of potential energy, you know. It is Enron. It was crude oil or who knows.
Right, and I was throughout the entire movie trying to figure out how could a house of cards falling actually ignite that gasoline. I couldn't get it. The next thing that I saw was Good Night and Good Luck, and the reason why I'm jumping right to that is because I think that what Good Night and Good Luck was showing is how the press could out someone who's doing the wrong thing, namely Joe McCarthy and McCarthyism, and by calling someone something, that's, you know, what they become. They're becoming persecuted. And, you know, this movie, the Enron movie, is all about that. It's the press, it's independent media calling someone out and calling a spade, for lack of a better term. So I was a little bit underwhelmed by Good Night and Good Luck. I mean, I thought it was a good movie. I thought it was done well. I thought the acting was done well. But I was expecting, you know, rah, 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 because I went right from the Enron movie to this, and it wasn't a hard-charging kind of thing. It was Murrow's understated, you know, late 50s, you know, sitting there with a cigarette, you know, making these highbrow barbs at Joe McCarthy versus, you know, the Enron thing, which was somewhat crude in its way of attacking these guys head on.
Well, that's not a fair criticism, though. I loved Good Night and Good Luck. I thought Strathern's performance was amazing. And I talked about this when I did the review of the film, whatever, months ago, so many months ago. But do you remember the scene where we were seeing sort of a profile view of Strathern, but we were looking at a video monitor and it was actually of Murrow? So Strathern had to learn all of the tilts of the face and perfectly mimic Murrow's speech so that what we were seeing would match perfectly with what was on the monitor. Do you remember that scene?
I remember the scene, but I couldn't tell if it was actually him or if it was Murrow. I was struggling to see it.
Yeah, it was Murrow on the video, but we were seeing the side sort of profile of Strathern, and it was incredible. Well, I long for a day when the media does its job and behaves appropriately and politely and professionally.
Well, and I think that something else that happened in the news recently, which is, you know, my other way of segueing into another topic, was this whole Walter Reed fiasco. Did you hear anything about this?
I also wish the news would be black and white again, but yeah, I have heard about the Walter Reed thing.
And if for anyone who doesn't know about it, if you're living under a rock, it's the Walter Reed Army Hospital where all of the wounded are coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan. The soldiers come back, they're horribly wounded, they get top-notch medical care, and then they're shelved, essentially, in a rat-infested hellhole. Again, for lack of a better term. And there are a couple of reporters for the Washington Post who outed them. And everyone knew about this. But the reporters are the ones that outed them. Now they're doing something about it. Now they fired the Secretary of the Army, or he resigned. The general that was in charge of Walter Reed resigned or was canned. But it's only because of the press. And this has been going on for years. And people are admitting this has been going on since Vietnam, since Korea, kind of conditions.
VA benefits have been going down, and the quality of care in the hospitals has been going down. It's been a subject of some discussion in the news, but it's like no one's been doing anything about it.
Right. And if people want to talk about the liberal media or, you know, the media is distorting things, well, you know what? This is why this country is based on freedom of the press, because the politicians aren't protecting some citizens. The media is actually protecting the citizens in this case. And you know, I'm appalled at a lot of these things that are happening. You know, hearing about soldiers who are having brain trauma and they're having depression and committing suicide because they're in a rat-infested apartment where the walls are literally crumbling, and they're asking for help, but they can't get in to see a psychologist or a psychiatrist, and they're just in despair. So it's horrible.
Yeah, because
people want to talk about
George Bush supports the troops.
And I was just going to say the same thing. People want to talk about we support the troops, Democrat, Republican, everyone's saying they support the troops. That's the way you support the troops. For whether you agree or disagree with the war, when the troops come back and they're injured, you got to support them. That's the way to do it, not just by putting together a resolution saying we support the troops in name only. How about, you know, backing it up with some actions? And everyone in the government for decades has known about this, and they've done nothing.
And let's not send them someplace they shouldn't be in the first place.
Well, yeah, that's another problem.
It's a small one.
But if people are talking about, I support the troops, they're wearing ribbons, they're doing all of that, you know, let's do something about it.
Yep, yep. I agree. So wait a minute. On the whole, though, you're still recommending Good Night and Good Luck, aren't you?
Well, yeah, and I want to clear up something else there. I wasn't saying that I didn't like it. I was saying just in stark contrast to the Enron movie, which was more action-packed and a little bit more crude, when it got to Good Night and Good Luck, because it was more refined, the contrast is what made me feel sort of let down. It wasn't that I thought there was anything bad with the movie.
So what you're saying is the troops let you down.
They did. I support the director, but not the action that he took in directing it.
Oh, okay. Is that binding or non-binding?
Well, I don't know. It's still in committee.
Okay. I'll live with that. So we have another topic, too. The crazy blonde woman, right?
Oh, yeah. That's right. And this one we can go on for years because we're talking about Ann Coulter, right?
I was. Who are you talking about?
Okay.
Oh, yeah, that's right. There was another blonde woman who had died, but I don't know if she was crazy, and I don't want to talk about her.
No, I'm just talking about Ann Coulter. I knew who you were referring to. Yeah, Ann Coulter. She's a piece of work. I don't really know what else to say about her. I almost have a hard time repeating what she said. Maybe you should say it. I can't say it.
Well, no, we don't need to repeat it. I'm pretty sure most people know what she said.
All right. She called John Edwards a name. Actually, she said something, and this is why I'm saying we can go on for years about this, because it brings up a question for me. She said that in joke or in jest, she doesn't want to talk about John Edwards because if she uses this word, it's the F word, not the one you're thinking of, if she uses that word, she has to go in rehab, and it was a really derogatory term. She's just out of control.
Well, she's nuts. I've said this on our show before. Why she gets any respect at all? I mean, if she were examined by a psychiatrist, she would be declared unfit. Absolutely.
Sociopath.
She's nuts. She really is. She deserves no respect. She shouldn't have a widely published column. But unfortunately, what she is doing is she's allowing the debate to start to include these things because not enough people are speaking out, you know, loudly against her. You know what I mean?
Well, I think that she definitely is a sociopath because I don't think that she believes the things that she touts. I think that she talks about being a conservative. I think that if someone hit her in the head with a brick and she suddenly learned about liberalism or changed her opinion, she would have just as much passion for that. I think that she just she picked a side essentially and figured I could make money off of this and is saying the most controversial thing she can so she gets headlines.
Well, I just think she's a jerk.
Well, and that's how she chooses to do it, because she doesn't care about who she hurts or what she says. She just knows that she's going to get press. I don't know. And she knows that there are going to be people who are lemmings who are going to just, you know, stand in line behind her to defend her. Again, I'm mixing the metaphors. I'm hoping that they're lemmings, because then it means they're all going to go off a cliff.
Well, you're making a metaphor stew.
It's like a smorgasbord.
Absolutely. Well, I just think she's nuts. She has no respect for me. Not that she cares. It might be interesting to get her on the program someday and see if she's that crazy on our show.
The only thing that I would have to say that I would agree with her on is that she should go into rehab.
Absolutely.
But she does bring up a point, and I hate that it's coming up out of her mouth. I hate that it's coming up because of something that she said. She brings up a point about, you know, people in this society, if they say the wrong thing or if they express their opinion, that they go into rehab and everyone's okay with it. All they do is say they're sorry and it's okay again. And you know what? If she went into rehab or if she said she was sorry, I don't believe her. It's not going to do a thing for me.
Every circumstance is going to be unique. Every person, every situation is going to be unique. I mean, some people are going to mean it. Some people aren't going to mean it. Some people are going to say it just to feel absolved, and then they're going to go continue to behave badly some more. And which one of those she is, I don't know. I don't know her well enough, but she is nuts. And she
I firmly believe that if she went into rehab and if she recanted 24 hours later, she'd pull up Britney Spears and be right out of rehab drinking again.
Well, I mean, there's like a sort of hyphenated word that when I think of her, this just pops into my mind. Ball gag.
Bring out the gimp.
Exactly. She just needs to be gagged, you know? And then maybe like Alex in A Clockwork Orange will keep her eyes open with those little medical instrument things and we'll keep putting eye drops in her eyes so they stay hydrated. And then we'll just make her watch footage of like Noam Chomsky for like weeks.
As she listens to Ludwig von.
The Ludwig von. Lovely, lovely music. I bought a Kubrick film a little while ago.
Did you?
Yeah.
Which one was that?
Let's see. Jack D. Ripper is in it.
Ah, The Shining.
Hmm? No.
Jack D. Ripper.
Yeah, that was one of the character names.
I don't get that one.
It's about a bomb.
Oh, yes. Yes, yes, yes. Dr. Strangelove.
Yeah, it was in the $10 video bin at the grocery store. Every once in a while, they get some new titles in there, and they're just $9.99. And I haven't watched that film in so long, I figured I would buy it.
Slim Pickens is probably the best character in that movie.
Yeah, he's great.
He rides the bomb.
Woo-hoo! Woo-wee! He rides it down like a cowboy. If I'm not mistaken, he was in the crowd in that rodeo when Borat was singing the national anthem.
No, Slim Pickens is departed.
He is dearly departed. Hey, you know what? We still have not heard from Chris. Chris is still MIA, our hockey statue fondling crazy man. Chris, feedback at bloodyveg.com. Let us know you're alive.
Yeah, send us a puckogram or something.
Watch your mouth. Hey, I want to give my best to my friend Jesse out in California. He's going through a little bit of stressful time right now, so I just wanted to say, hey, Jesse, I know he listens to our show. So we'll talk again next week.
Jesse, we support the troops.
Non-bindingly.
That's right.
So are we done with that? Should we do another tune?
Yeah, let's do with that. My ire is all up. I need to relax.
Yeah, we got to get John's ire down.
Yes. I'll take a couple of deep breaths and listen to some UK.
Well, or a band that sounds an awful lot like them. Let's check them out. was a cool track.
That was Beeblebrox, not Zaphod. That was Beeblebrox, the band.
And it's funny because John has sent me over a couple other tracks, and most of them are really jazzy. But this one takes a bit of a left turn and goes into like late 70s progressive rock and roll, and not just a little bit, a lot bit.
Yeah, on the PodSafe Music Network, they've got about 700 tracks, so they've got a lot of stuff to pick from.
John mentioned the band UK, which was a late 70s progressive rock and roll band that had a variety of different musicians in it. One of John's favorite drummers, one of my favorite drummers, yeah, Bill Bruford. And then it had Terry Bozzio on one of the records, and Alan Holdsworth, a guitarist, was in the band, and John Wetton was singing and playing bass, and Eddie Jobson was playing keyboards and violin. And this is sort of like a combination of both the records all rolled into one, you know, total full-on prog rock, not sounding like jazz at all.
No, it was good stuff.
So hopefully everyone liked that. That's the kind of stuff, actually, John and I really like. I mean, not that we agree on all of the music we listen to, but I think John and I are both big UK fans.
Yeah.
And, you know, we love those guys.
Yeah, we'll pick up a couple of other tracks. They've got some Latin-sounding tunes. They've got some lighter jazz-sounding tunes. They run the gamut.
They're gamut runners. So I saw a film.
I was just going to say, so what kind of torture did you go through at the MWPAIORPG.org?
Well, I didn't go through any torture, but I saw an amazing film last night. Have you heard of The Painted Veil?
I have heard of that.
It's a Somerset Maugham book turned into a film with Edward Norton and Naomi Watts starring in it.
Two actors that I think are great. Edward Norton, again, phenomenal in The Illusionist. But
well, Giamatti, I thought, carried the film, though. I mean, as good as Norton was, I thought Giamatti was the film. He is so strong.
He's strong in pretty much everything, too.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I love Norton. He is becoming like our new De Niro or something, the young, up-and-coming method guy who's just phenomenal, you know?
No, the new De Niro is DiCaprio. Just ask Scorsese.
I don't know. I'm kind of not a big fan of Leo. I mean, he's okay. He seems to be getting better. Now that he looks older than 12 and he can be sort of taken as an adult on the screen, I'm a little bit more accepting of him. But Norton's really strong. Really like him.
I've seen a couple of things that DiCaprio's done, you know, outside of his teeny bopper Titanic roles. And I think he's got chops.
Yeah, I think he does too. But like I said, for me, Giamatti was the strength of this film just because his character didn't end up being as corrupt as we thought he might be. You know what I mean?
I've asked you this before, but I can't remember. Have you seen Fight Club?
I have seen Fight Club, yeah.
Okay, yeah. Edward Norton in that film. That was a good one.
Yeah, I've been seeing too much of Norton lately. Got to back off the Norton. But then again, I saw The Painted Veil with Edward Norton and Naomi Watts, a Somerset Maugham book. And it's about Norton and Watts, ironically. It's a love story between, they play Walter and Kitty, a couple that got married and immediately moved to China because Norton's character is he's a doctor, but he doesn't really practice anymore. He's not really a clinician. He's a bacteriologist, kind of an infectious disease guy.
Oh, I thought you were going to say he does a radio show like Dr. Dean.
No, he doesn't. And this takes place around 1925, so there probably weren't a lot of network Dr. Dean radio shows. But he gets whisked off to Shanghai. He has some sort of government civil service job, and his office is in Shanghai, so they move to Shanghai. It's not really clear whether the Naomi Watts character actually is in love with Ed Norton, or maybe she's getting a little bit old and long in the tooth and actually gave in to the pressure of her mother to get married before she becomes an old maid. But they find themselves in China, and then there's a little infidelity, and I won't say with whom, but what ends up happening is a cholera outbreak happens in some remote province of China, and Edward Norton volunteers, his character, the doctor, volunteers to go and run the hospital and run the general process of trying to rid the area of cholera and all of that. And he brings the Kitty character with him, his wife, and due to the infidelity of I won't say whom, their marriage was kind of not at its strongest when they chose to go there. But then what ends up happening is they sort of develop a new appreciation for one another and end up kind of re-falling in love. And that's all I'm going to tell you, because there's a lot of drama left in the film as well regarding the cholera outbreak and what happens and people getting sick and people getting well. So I don't want to spoil the film for you, except to say that it's an absolutely mesmerizing story. And the scenery as always, whenever there's a Chinese film, there's something about the mountain ranges in China that just don't look like anywhere else in the world, and the scenery is spectacular.
Yeah, that's what I'd probably expect of a film based on such a literary background. It's not just some script that some hack knocked off, right?
Yeah, right. As far as I know, he's not a hack. I've actually never read any Somerset Maugham, but it might be time to start. This is a 2006 film. John Curran directed it. It's both a U.S.-Chinese production, 125 minutes, made in the year 2006. Definitely worth seeing. Great performances, great story, great scenery. What else do you want? I mean, it's got it all.
I like Naomi Watts, too.
She's phenomenal. Both performances are absolutely terrific. I mean, there's this film, if you're a film buff, you're going to love this film.
Have you seen Mulholland Drive?
Have not.
That's the first film that I ever saw Naomi Watts in. And, you know, it's a typical David Lynch kind of mind bender. She's phenomenal in that, too. I think you'd like that. Yeah, she plays a lot of these quirky characters. She does some mainstream films like King Kong. But what I like about her is that she doesn't stick with one type of role.
Yeah, no, she's great. I'm going to have to look for her in a few more films. But you know what? I think that's a show. What do you think? Speaking of getting a little long in the tooth...
Tis a show.
Well, hey, thanks for stopping in to another one of our sort of impromptu sort of Skype shows, because John Steller is not stellar, actually, and that's really the problem here.
Yeah, my basement it's not wet, but it's destroyed.
Not quite ready for prime time. So thanks for tuning in. Check us out on the web, www.bloodyveg.com.
Send us feedback to feedback@bloodyveg.com.
Check out the forum, bloodyveg.com/forum. And Chris, if you're out there, send us some feedback, or at least a note in a bottle or something, so we know where you are.
That's right.
So we'll catch you on the rebound, and remember, you've been listening to the VIB.